Alt NPR.
Welcome to Press Start. I'm Robert Holt.
I'm Kyle Orland.
Press Start is a program where we talk about the art and craft of video games. We're waiting on Ralph Cooper. Where is that dude?
Down on North Capitol. So, he's on his way.
This episode, we're going to be talking about music in games and how music has evolved over the course of the history of video games, how it's used, some of our favorite examples of music in video games. The first thing I want to talk about is sort of the classic video games.
Yeah.
What I think is really cool about the classic video games, you know, the first video games that actually had music in them, is that they worked with the limitations of the hardware that they had, and they came up with some incredibly creative solutions and some incredibly creative bits of music. Sgt. Pepper's, the Beatles album, was recorded on a 4-track. Mm-hmm. And I imagine that the album would be a little different if they had more tracks. You know, yeah. Maybe they wouldn't have done as many creative things with it.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Having the limitations seems to make people more inventive. You know, when you have a CD soundtrack, like with modern games, you can get a big orchestra, or you can do these really outlandish things. But with the early games, you had, you know, 4 channels of sound. And
If that.
Sometimes it was like 2 channels, I think, with Atari. You had beeps and boops. You had to be really creative to make it sound anything like music.
Yeah, and the Commodore 64 had what was called the SID chip. And the Commodore 64 is a computer that came out in 1982 or 3, one of those years. And the SID chip is the sound interface device. And the SID had 3 voices, and if you used one of those voices for percussion, you only had 2 voices to make the music or the chords. Mm-hmm. And people did some creative things, like they would arpeggiate, meaning they would play 3 notes together really fast with the same voice to make it sound like you were hearing a chord, when in effect you were hearing 3 notes together in succession.
By voices, do you mean actual, like, human voices?
No, I don't. I mean, like, a note.
Oh, okay.
So a synthesizer voice is one note.
So you could do, like, 2 notes at a time?
You could do 2 notes plus percussion, or 3 notes and don't do any percussion.
Okay.
It's really interesting how cheesy we thought it was at the time, but how cool it was at the same time. Beck, his most recent album, Guero, I think he did an EP that came out before that, where the songs were remixed using, sometimes they used a SID chip to make the music.
Oh, really?
It just has this incredibly cool sound to it.
Yeah, I think I've heard some of that. It really sounds like a classic game, like beeping, booping in the background, and then his voice comes in.
Yeah,
over it.
That's right.
My greatest memory of classic game music, I think, is the ending to Super Mario Land for the Game Boy. I don't know if you ever played that.
I think so, but I don't remember the music for that.
Well, the music to the game was kind of weird and repetitive, but at the end, they play this kind of sweeping... It wasn't quite orchestral, but it made my heart soar to hear this music. I got really good at that game. I could beat it, you know, with my eyes closed. And I would just keep it on that ending screen, looping through this about minute and a half sample with, like, 4 sound channels and beeps and boops. And these were the days before, you know, MP3s and being able to download a soundtrack off iTunes or something. You had to beat the game if you wanted it. The music was really the reward for the game. And that happens in a lot of games, like Final Fantasy VII, the battle music. That little da-da-da-da at the end.
Da-da-da-da. Yeah.
You know, just hearing that makes you think success in battle. You know, my friends and I, when something good happens in our lives, we'll break out into that song.
It's so geeky that both you and I knew that. And second of all, that you do that when good things happen, that's even worse.
It's so funny. We'll do a little dance somehow.
With each iteration of Final Fantasy, they do different music afterwards.
Right.
You know, and my favorite one is the Final Fantasy VII music after the battle. Yeah, it has that really cool sort of mid-80s, even though it's from 1997, it has just a really cool sounding synthesizer track.
Yeah, but that first theme always remains the same. It's kind of draws you back into the series, you know, it connects you.
Yeah, and that's what I think Nintendo does better than anybody else, mm-hmm. is that they, you know, for instance, New Super Mario
Definitely.
Brothers, all those themes, you know, they've started to condition you. There's sort of a culture and a language of Nintendo game music.
Yeah, anyone who's played Mario knows that.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and like in Zelda, when you hear that, know you've unlocked something.
Exactly.
And it's been that way since, I think, the first Zelda.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a demo for the Phantom Hourglass, and when they drew on the touchscreen and got all six things with the boomerang, that
same
sound happened, but it just sounded cooler than it, you know, of course, than it used to.
Now, I don't know how much of it is really nostalgia or how much of it is that it's just good music, but, you know, when you hear that sound, it just makes you feel good.
That's one of the things that we should bring up is the comparison to film soundtracks,
mm-hmm.
because we're at the point now where it sort of is that.
Yeah, in modern games.
Yeah, in modern games. And I don't like being told how to feel. And when there's a musical cue that comes up that is just so syrupy or so tense and it seems out of place, that is a buzzkill. It brings you out of the game.
Like, what can you think of any examples?
Basically every game. What I'll do is I'll leave the music on,
mm-hmm.
you know, when I first play a game and see if I like it. And 95% of the time, it'll start to annoy me and I'll turn it off, especially the modern games.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I'll turn on a CD or the radio when I'm playing a game. The music just doesn't matter that much to me in modern games.
And that's why when something does shine through, it's really surprising. There are three games lately that have just blown me away with the music. One is World of Warcraft. I've played that game more than I played any other game, and each zone has its own sort of theme, and it really enhances the zone.
Does it get repetitive? And you've played that game for dozens and dozens of hours, at least.
Oh, yeah, days.
So do you get tired of it?
I don't. And
that's amazing.
It may be because, you know, Laura Cartman, who did the score for EverQuest 2, I don't play that game as much, but I still play it. I get tired of it, and I have to turn it off. And the score is fantastic. It's really good. I think she's talented.
That's one good thing about modern games, I think. You can have, with all the space on CDs and DVDs, you can have longer tracks. A lot of people I know, not me, but other people get kind of annoyed when there's like a 5-second sample loop that is the background music for older games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just hear it over and over, and that gets on people's nerves. For me, if it's good music, I can hear it over and over again without getting tired of it.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, a total music snob. I don't know how WoW, I can actually listen to WoW over and over again, the same music. The two other games are, there's Guild Wars Factions. Jeremy Soule, I think is how you pronounce the guy's name. He's done basically every RPG score, every role-playing game score for the past, you know, 5 or 6 years. When you load up Guild Wars Factions, this beautiful seascape appears, and you just hear this music with the Asian, like sort of a violin type instrument.
Nice.
And it's just so beautiful, and it just fixes the mood.
And this is at a specific point? This
is right
in?
When you load the game.
Ah.
It plays that theme, and all the music is like that. And the other one was Indigo Prophecy.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So I was listening to it, and I said, just looking at the opening screen, the installation music, there was this beautiful nylon string guitar, and then the strings come in. I'm like, this is awesome. I'm already hooked, and I haven't even started playing it. Turns out it was Angelo Badalamenti, the guy who did Twin Peaks and worked with Julie Cruz. And, I mean, the guy is a genius. I mean, it's a really scary game. It's like the opening scene is your character killing somebody and being taken over, being possessed, and you don't know why.
It's very creepy music.
Yeah. I mean, just like all the Twin Peaks stuff.
You get this sense of foreboding just listening to it, even if nothing interesting's happening.
you don't feel like the composer is leading you in a direction. To me, really good music enhances a mood. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make you feel a mood. And if it does make you feel a mood, it doesn't feel like your hand is being held and you're being led there.
It's not quite leading, but I like it when a game will change the music based on what's happening in the game. You know, kind of like a film score, when a scene changes, you get a different music to change the mood, kind of like in Super Mario Brothers, even when you get a Starman and you get that really da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, fast music, it kind of changes the way you feel. You end up speeding up in the game. You want to go faster. The music kind of drives you to do that.
Hey, Ralph Cooper's here. How's it going,
hey,
Ralph? All right, so we want to talk about licensed games. Mm. Give us your take on how is music different now? How do you feel about licensed game, you know, licensed music in games?
Well, I think the first and easiest place to start, of course, would be sports games.
Yeah.
You can see a market change from back in the days when you had Double Dribble with the little, you know, you remember it had the cool little music. It was kind of funky. It wasn't like we were necessarily marketing to black people, but we are marketing to black people.
The urban market.
Yeah, the urban market. That's right. Correction. That's the politically correct way of saying it. Urban market.
But that was like beeps and bloops.
Yeah,
now,
but it was soulful beeps and bloops. Like, I know a lot of guys. Like,
it's pretty impressive what they could do.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? There are people who hip-hop has sampled all kind of different songs, but take it forward now to like the first time we really saw it was in the early Maddens, like the late 99, 2000
Once
Madden.
It got on the CD.
Yeah, you know, Madden straight out had licensed songs, and now to the point where ESPN 2K6 just last year for the Xbox 360, PSP, all the, you know, say different systems, they put out a CD just of the game music because it was so many people who had created songs just for the games. And it wasn't just hip-hop. It was rock acts. It were alt acts. There were people from foreign countries. Like, I really get a kick out of FIFA because one thing about FIFA that's dope, regardless of what different, you know, system you play it on, it has its own unique soundtrack with songs from basically every country in the game. And it's, you know, it's a good way to get turned on. There's a rapper, for example, that I like named Roots Maneuver. And I heard Roots Maneuver in the FIFA Street 2 game, and it freaked me out. Like, oh, it's Roots.
It's a good way of discovering music, and the labels know this. They fight to get on the Madden soundtrack because they know having a song on there will increase their sales.
Right, and you can put out unknowns, virtual unknowns. I know that there are certain people whose rock group act, for example, have been in games, from out of nowhere, you're like, who in the world?
Yeah, and these are songs you'll hear over and over. You know, people play Madden for hundreds of hours with all their friends in the room.
For some strange reason.
Why would they do that?
Why do you play Madden when there's so many other wonderful games out there? I'm sorry. I'll stop.
The other thing that, you know, I heard, and we've heard this a lot, but listeners might not have heard this yet. I was talking to Jay Kernis, who's our Senior Vice President of Programming here at NPR, and he was saying that he was talking to a guy from Electronic Arts, and the guy says, artists aren't broken on the radio anymore. Artists are broken in the games.
Yeah.
And in the strip clubs.
And in the strip club.
Check that.
Where people are hearing their music.
Maybe. Yeah, you know, you can play video games, PSPs, in the strip club. Not that I've done that.
So you could do both. You could kind of mix your own music.
Hey, I'm just saying, you know, it's a brand new way of putting things. Never mind, go ahead.
So, and another way that music is used, and it's sort of, you can compare this to film as well. There's something called source music, meaning that the music that you're hearing is part of the environment. It's not sort of this artificial overlay. And it, when you hear source music, it puts you in the story. Rear Window, Alfred Hitchcock's one of my favorite movies of all time. All the music in there is source music. It's either playing from a radio on the set, or somebody's playing the piano live, or something. And it just adds so much to the power of it.
Yeah.
One game that Ralph and I both love, and I think you love it too, Beyond Good and Evil. There was this one scene in the game where you go into this bar, and you're in this bar, and there's this secret agency called Iris that is overthrowing the government because they're totalitarian, and there's this music playing, and it's called Propaganda.
Propaganda.
Yeah, and it's just, it's so cool because, and the other thing that's cool about it is you can hear it loudly when you're in the club. When you go back behind the bar into this,
it fades out.
It, like, they EQ it or do something to it so that it sounds like faint, and you can sort of hear it thumping in the background when you're in the back room.
You're kind of underground. It gives you that feeling.
Yeah, it's just that, to me, that is a cool moment.
There's something that came to mind as soon as you said that. Of course, you can't mention any of that without saying Grand Theft Auto.
Grand Theft Auto, that's what I was going to say.
And the fact that they straight put CD boxes out of the channels. Like, and I have to, one, I don't know if it freaked out to both of you, but when they put out the first one and they actually had a public radio channel where people just talk
and did
pledge drives all day.
I thought
I was going to fall out. I couldn't believe it. But it was crazy because, just as in real life, when it gets on your nerves, you can turn the channel.
That's right.
And listen to something else and then go back once, you know, All Things Considered or, I guess, Morning Edition.
And then when you get out of the car and turn off the radio, it seems so quiet.
Right.
Yeah. Kinda. Yeah. All you can hear is, like, the sounds of violence.
Right. And it's great. And you know, with that sound of violence thought in mind, Splinter Cell. Splinter Cell, you can actually just go and you can shoot the radio. You know what I'm saying? Instead of turning it off, or you can shoot the computer, therefore making it inaccessible for anyone else. You know what I mean? But like when you walk up on the computer, you hear the and the further you get away, it's zzz, zzz, zzz. But when you think of it from, I guess, the aspect of the sound, you walk into these places and you just hear that. Mm-hmm. You know, or like if he gets hit or he'll hear certain things, the fact that it's distinct.
Yeah.
Like that. It's pretty dope.
Thanks for listening. If you have comments about our podcast, send them to pressstart@sotm.net. For Kyle Orland and Ralph Cooper, I'm Robert Holt. See you next time on Press Start.
Bye-bye.
Peace.
Alt.